now playing.
Why so serious?
What is the Matrix?
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What's in the box?
You like scary movies?
What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Movie reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast Movie Reviews in 20 Qs. I am your host, Sam Hurley, and I am joined this week by my usual co-host, Stacey. How are you, Stacey?
I'm fantastic, thanks, Sam. I'm super excited to be here today.
Oh, I'm super excited as well, because normally we like to throw a bunch of questions at a movie and pretend we know all the answers, but this week we actually have some real inside knowledge. We are joined by Jackie Van Beek, one half of the writing, acting and directing duo that put together one of our favourite films of 2018, The Breaker Upperers. How are you, Jackie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. We're so glad to have you here. Me and Stacey loved your movie. It was definitely one of the highlights of this year.
Oh, that's very kind of you. It was a lot of fun to make, so I'm glad people are enjoying it.
Excellent. So, yeah, Jackie, what we're going to basically do is throw close to 20 questions at you, and they start off fairly innocuous and then they go a bit absurd, sort of play into a couple of the ones that we do in our podcast. But we'll start off with a gentle one first, which is, well, the Breaker Upperers have achieved global domination here in New Zealand. But for our foreign listeners, what's the general premise of the film?
Okay, the general premise is two women decide to start a business breaking up couples for cash. That'll be it. That's the premise.
Hey, Jackie, what do you think is the best way to break up with someone?
Oh, you mean in real life, like in the real world?
Yeah.
To be honest, I am quite a direct and honest person. And, you know, now at, you know, I'm 42, I'm reasonably mature, certainly more mature than I was when I was a tearaway 21-year-old. Nowadays, I believe it's good to, like, you ring the person, or maybe you text the person, then maybe you make a phone call and you arrange to meet, like, the old-fashioned way, and then you look at them in the eye, you tell them the truth, and then you just get out of there. I haven't always done it that way, but but nowadays, if I wasn't happily married with three children, that's what I'd do.
So I guess the converse one to that is, what do you think would be the worst way to break up with someone?
I mean, just the way that everyone seems to do it these days is just, like, not contact them, just, like, ghost them and just pretend nothing ever happened and you've never known that person or seen that person. I reckon that seems to be very popular these days. I'm not a fan. Not a fan.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jackie. That's a coward's way out.
Very, very. But would you guys do that? Are you guys a couple? I don't know very much about you. Would you guys just pretend you'd never seen each other? And
yeah, we're married.
Yeah.
I must admit, in my dating life, I have ghosted one person once, and it was horrible. I felt very bad for them. Yeah, it's nasty.
It is. However.
Okay.
We have the technology these days to do it, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So true.
Okay, so on the topic of breaking up, what famous couple would you absolutely refuse to break up?
Ooh, I mean, it would have to probably be right now, November 2018, it would probably be those royals that have just left our country, Meghan and Harry. I can't remember their actual title. Isn't that terrible? The Duke and Duchess of something? Because I would just be hated by so many people if I did that. But that's kind of more about me and kind of my ego and my vanity and, you know, wanting to protect my popularity, isn't it? I don't know anything about their relationship. I don't know if they're happy. I don't know what's going on. Apparently they got to pat a kiwi, so they sounded happy on the radio.
That's exciting. So, yeah, as I said at the start, you wrote, directed and act in this film. Now, what sort of approach do you take, and is it easier when you're writing a character that you know you're going to play yourself as opposed to writing for a character that you haven't yet cast? Is there much of a difference when you're sort of going through that writing process?
Yeah, well, the whole project started when I just came up with the idea, like the premise, one day. And then I rang my very good friend Madeline Sami and asked if she'd be keen to write with me as co-writers for us both to play the lead roles. Yep. So it really did start with that whole idea of finding someone that I work really well with and then writing for ourselves. And yeah, I find it hugely easier to write characters if I know who's playing them, whether it's me or whether it's someone else. And especially, you know, when I've written other films or and things, when it has come time to cast them, then I'll always just rewrite, of course. But I find casting early very useful for the writing process.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, that's good, huh?
Following on the writing theme, were there any standard comedy tropes that you tried to avoid while you were writing this film?
Well, yeah, because Madeline and I both love rom-coms, like, and we've watched a lot of them. But what we were becoming a bit sick of was kind of the messages we were being fed, you know, over the last 20 years. And so even though we embraced like, a subset of the rom-com genre, like we'd describe our film as a buddy comedy, we definitely, there were things in the kind of classic rom-com that we wanted to avoid. So for example, it was very important to us that our friendship between the two women was the central relationship in the story, and that we didn't get sidetracked too much by the love interest. And also we thought we want to start single and we want to end single. Like, we don't want to write ourselves a double church wedding with a couple of dudes, you know, four women. We can't do that. Were definitely very conscious things we wanted to avoid and find more original and contemporary kind of ways of telling those stories. You know, for us, it's a story about friendship and about allowing everyone to navigate their own way through a happy and sad world, you know, but navigating your own path. So
I think that was the thing I was most impressed by. It is, it just sort of skewed a lot of those standard comedy, romantic comedy tropes. I think that was the thing that really blew me away and which I really enjoyed the most out of it.
Of course, we still fell into the old classic song and dance ending, which we thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, we promised to avoid it, and then we were like, why should we be avoiding this? People love this kind of ending, and we really love doing that. Very silly.
So next up, it's a bit of a spoiler alert, but Jemaine Clement pops up for one hell of an awkward cameo / sex scene. How did you and Madeline go about pitching the scene to him, and what was his sort of general reaction to it?
Well, Jemaine's a very very old and good friend of ours, and the way I went about pitching it to him was I begged him.
Please have sex with me.
he was, I've worked with him a lot, you know, ever since, you know, we were at university together, and he was up being an outside eye in our rehearsal process just before we went into production, just because Madeline and I were writing, directing and performing. We wanted to get some rehearsal in ourselves. So we asked Jemaine to fly up from Wellington and be in the room with us. And so I left it to that point where I actually had him in the room, and I was like, Jemaine, there is one other thing I wanted to ask you. And I was just wondering if you would terribly mind doing a very short scene. It is kind of a sex scene, but I really would love you to do it because I don't want to do it with a stranger, and I'm begging you, please, please do it. And he was like, oh. He's so funny. He was just like, oh, Jax. I was like, please, I'm sorry, please. He was like, all right. I was very happy that he said yes, because he's a dear friend of mine, and you know, it made a very awkward sex scene a lot less awkward for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. So speaking of some other famous Kiwi names attached to this film, Taika Waititi is listed as executive producer. How much involvement did he have in the film?
He was very helpful. Again, he's a very good friend of ours, known him for a long time. And so our film was made through Picky Films, which is Cathy O'Neill and Taika's company. And so we pitched it to those guys, and they were like, yeah, let's develop it through Picky. And so we had it's a very collaborative kind of process that they run. So we had, a lot of writers around the table jamming ideas with us, and a lot of workshops. And so Tucker was involved in those early ones. And then he got engaged on Thor. So we saw him less and less, as you can imagine.
No. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, apparently he was quite busy on that. He would still manage to find time to read scripts. You know, we probably wrote, 9 or 10 drafts of the film before we went into production. So he would find time to read drafts. He even did a bit of writing for us when he was back in New Zealand. We asked him to just do a quick pass and add some jokes, some of which we filmed. Others we were like, oh, that's rubbish. That's just a rubbish joke. And then he was very helpful just as a sounding board in terms of just, you know, if we had casting kind of queries, or like when we're getting our heads of department, our crew together, you know, he'd just lend his opinion. And then again in the edit, he managed to find time to watch a couple of edits and just give us a few notes and things. So he was there through the production, but in a very kind of hands-off way. And he's always been someone who really believes that a film will succeed if the vision stays with the creators of the project. So he's never someone to kind of jump on and try to you know, try and change it. He was always just trying to kind of add and contribute to what Madeline and I were setting out to do. So yeah, he was very helpful. It was very nice.
Oh, that's cool. Speaking of him, and some of our listeners might actually recognise you as Jackie out of What We Do in the Shadows. Now, how different was working on the set of What We Do in the Shadows and working on the set of this?
Well, I was just an actor for What We Do in the Shadows. Of course, it was fully improvised. My role was anyway.
I didn't know that.
I'm not sure whether other people looked at scripts, but I was certainly not ever offered to look at a script. Jermaine would sometimes say to me each morning when I'd turn up, he'd say, "Oh, do you want to look at the sides? You know, which are the scenes for the day that you're going to shoot?" And I'd always say, "Oh, no, I'm going to be a lot better as a performer if I don't see anything." So he's like, "All right." So yeah, so they were very happy to let most. I think most of the actors were improvising throughout the entire film. And yeah, Madeline and I do direct in quite a similar way to those guys in terms of the way they direct performance. So, you know, long takes with the directors kind of yelling out things like suggestions and also very similar in that, of course, Tyker and Jermaine also wrote, directed and starred in their own film, which is exactly what we were doing. So there was a very similar flavour. Of course, they were flying people through the air and having people turn into bats and doing the effects things that we weren't doing. We were more doing our singing and our dancing numbers, don't we? It's exciting. I'm just about to go off to Toronto to direct a couple of episodes of the What We Do in the Shadows US sitcom spin-off. So that will be quite exciting to go off and do that on the other side of the camera.
That sounds really exciting. Yeah. And that leads really nicely into our next question. So if Breaker Uppers was reimagined as a TV series in America, who would you recast in the leading roles?
I mean, obviously for my role, someone extremely talented, attractive but not too attractive. I mean, you'd want to go for like I don't know anything about casting in the US. I don't know who's famous and who, you know, but, you know, like Kristen Wiig is always someone that I just think, I mean, you'd want to ask her and let her say no, but you'd want to ask her first.
Yeah, she'd be perfect, yeah.
Wouldn't she be great? And I don't know for Madeline's character. I mean, I wouldn't want to say, you know, that'd be a question for her. Someone obviously very talented and, kind of someone who looks about 20 years younger than she actually is, because Madeline is very close to my age. We're born on the same day, but she does look, I was a little bit worried at one point in the production that she looks too close to the age of James Rolleston, who was so young. I was like, I looked at them one day, I said, "You guys look the same age. This is ridiculous. Like, this isn't working at all."
Oh, that's perfect. Now, yeah. Part of the charm for this film for me is that there's a genuine, like, romance between you and Madeline, but it's also mixed with some of the really absurd scenarios that you guys find yourself in. Were there any scenes that were particularly tough for you to keep a straight face during?
The scenes that actually come to mind were probably scenes with other characters, like, well, especially Anna Scotney, who plays Seppa, James Rolleston's girlfriend he's trying to break up with. She would crack us up a lot when we were in scenes with her. There was one scene where Madeline and I, and we hadn't really written it, we remembered when we got onto set. It's quite a pivotal scene where we turn up and Madeline's character kind of ruins the job, sabotages the job, and tells this whole party of people that the host's wife is dead. And we hadn't really written the scene, so we were just wildly improvising, trying to record the scene, and we did laugh a lot in that because we were desperately coming up with kind of crazy lines. Also, there's a strip scene which we were manically kind of running around, taking off clothes, throwing tennis balls in the air and laughing a lot. One of our producers, Ainsley Gardner, I remember her just kind of, you know, yelling, "No, just keep going, stop it." Because we were all running behind time, you know, "No, stop it, no, put, don't, okay, put your clothes back on, okay, carry on, no, don't, no, no."
So that awesome dance scene at the end where you're absolutely crushing it, was a lot of that improvised as well?
Well, it had been choreographed, the actual moves, although Madeline wouldn't let me into the rehearsal. So it was the first time I'd seen the dance, which you could probably tell if you're watching my dance skills. I tried to sneak into rehearsal and she threw me out. I couldn't believe it. Because I said to Madeline, "I want to learn the dance and then I'm going to act like I don't know it." She was like, "No, no, 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 no. You're going to record it with knowing any of the moves."
Very clever. It worked.
It totally worked. It was awesome.
Mine and Madeline's dialogue towards the end was improvised. Again, we had, I think, 4 minutes to shoot our final exchange, which was kind of, you know, which we were aiming to be this quite heartfelt exchange where the kind of, you know, friendship was rekindled. And I think we had 4 minutes each on camera to come up with something. But we got there in the end.
That's awesome. Okay, time for a couple of our standard questions that we ask of every podcast that we sort of do, which are a bit bizarre, which hopefully you can answer. The first one is, what flavour pizza is this film?
Oh, wow. There's a lot going through my mind right now because I've recently turned pescatarian, so I just can't say anything with meat on. It's probably something actually like a margherita pizza, like a really well-made margherita pizza, but then with a couple of mistaken ingredients, like maybe half a can of spaghetti flopped on it, then a kind of whole lot of gherkins, and then they've been shoved to the side, and then just like a big ring of pineapple in the middle.
Beautiful.
That's what I'm
Congratulations, that's the most creative answer we've ever had to that question.
Yeah, yeah.
It's usually the same standard meat lovers or something like that. It's usually quite boring.
Okay, so another one that we like to ask is, what character in this movie just clearly needs to get laid?
Clearly needs to get laid. Oh, well, I'd say Celia Piccola's character Anna is an obvious one. That, our wonderful Australian comedian who played the most miserable character. Yeah, she needs to get laid a lot, I'd say, over and over again.
Yeah, good answer.
And our real famous question that we usually throw at every movie is, how would you have incorporated Nicolas Cage into this film?
Probably as someone from the IRD who found out we were running a business and not keeping any accounts, and that our business was highly morally ambiguous and completely illegal. I reckon he'd be like, someone, just someone from the local office that comes down and just shuts us down.
Would shut you down real good.
Yeah.
But still get him to play, even though he's so famous and his status is so great, I'd still get him to play it in quite a suburban way, like just from the local office, you know. Yeah. And like he turns up and we're not even there because we've forgotten about the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Awesome. And that takes us on to the final cue that we've got for you. And Stacey, you're going to
do. Oh, yes. So if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self any advice about relationships, what would it be?
To be honest, and this kind of circles back to one of your earlier questions, my advice to myself would be, try to be kind.
Yeah.
I think young people, certainly, you know, like, you do get a bit caught up in yourself when you're that young, and you forget that other people have feelings and want a little bit more time to chat about things. Yeah, that would be my advice to myself. Just take a little more time with people, you know?
Yeah, very sweet. Yeah, beautiful.
Sweet way to finish
it. What a sad ending.
That was good. Finishes off perfectly. Thank you so much for joining us and chatting about this. This has been really, really good and really enlightening for both of us. And Breaker Uppers is now out on DVD. And I saw somewhere that you guys were getting signed up by Netflix. Is that going to be on Netflix anytime soon? Or?
Yeah, well, we're on iTunes over here in New Zealand. And then we've actually sold to US Netflix.
Oh, nice.
So that's happening in February. But I do know that we're available to download on iTunes at the moment.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Brilliant. Cool.
Over this part of the world, yeah. But you know, anyone who has a DVD player, apparently, yes, DVDs are out. I mean, I don't know how you're going to play it, but you can get one of those little discs.
Brilliant. Well, there you go, American listeners. You're going to have to wait till February next year to see the amazing movie that is The Breaker Upper is.
Yeah.
And thanks again, Jackie. It's been an absolute treat.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
No problem.